The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
You don't need to be an expert to know that consolidating debt into a low fixed rate can save you money. The average interest rates on credit card debt are 17% APR. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? We wanted to take a second to tell you about LightStream's credit card consolidation loan. You can get a credit card consolidation loan with fixed interest rates as low as 5.49 APR with AutoPay. You can save thousands of dollars in interest, all with no fees. A division of SunTrust Bank. Be confident you're working with one of the nation's largest and strongest financial institutions. Apply today and get an additional interest rate discount on top of LightStream's already low rates. The only way for listeners with good credit to get this special interest rate discount is to go to LightStream.com/FTN. That's LightStream.com/FTN. LightStream.com/FTN. Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.5 auto pay discount. Available only when you select auto pay prior to loan funding. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com for important information about limits of LightStream loans, same day funding, and rate beat program.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Rudy Giuliani reveals new details about the president's role in hush money paid to a porn star.
Funneled through a law firm, and the president repaid it.
And later, concerns about an erupting volcano in Hawaii.
Hawaii County declared an emergency.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend with the president's legal advisor, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani, telling Fox News the president repaid his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, for hush money paid to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Here's correspondent Major Garrett.
He didn't know the details of this until we knew the details of it, which is a couple weeks ago. Maybe not even a couple, maybe 10 days ago.
That was President Trump's new personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, describing what the president knew about a $130,000 payment to adult film actress Stormy Daniels to gain her silence days before the election about an alleged affair with Mr. Trump. That payment was arranged by Mr. Trump's self-described fixer, Michael Cohen. The night before, also on Fox, Giuliani said Mr. Trump personally repaid Cohen for the deal.
Funneled through a law firm, and the president repaid it.
Giuliani's revelation contradicts what the president said on Air Force One April 5th. In a series of tweets, the president struck a decidedly different tone, saying the non-disclosure agreement with Daniels was common for celebrities and was used to, quote, stop the false and extortionist accusations made by her about an affair. Michael Avenatti is the lawyer representing Daniels.
It's an outrage, frankly, that the President of the United States would stand on Air Force One on videotape and blatantly lie to the American people. The President and his advisors are making this up as they go along. They realize they are in a heap load of trouble.
The President responded to Giuliani's remarks to reporters Friday.
Rudy is a great guy, but he just started a day ago. But he really has his heart into it. He's working hard. He's learning the subject matter.
Meanwhile, one of the president's attorneys, Ty Cobb, has announced he's retiring. The White House says Emmett Flood will join the president's legal team. He represented former President Bill Clinton during his impeachment. Now to the Russia probe. The president's legal team is sorting through questions special counsel Robert Mueller has sent to Mr. Trump. Here's CBS News Justice correspondent Jeff Pagase.
Many of the questions Special Counsel Mueller wants to ask the president involve former FBI Director James Comey. The New York Times reports, what did you think about Mr. Comey's intelligence briefing on January 6, 2017 about Russian election interference? And regarding the decision to fire Mr. Comey, when was it made? Why? And who played a role?
If you look at all of the people on the Democratic side, not only the Republican side, that was saying such terrible things about Director Comey.
Mueller also wants to ask the president about his May 12th tweet when he wrote, James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
President Trump's decision to fire Comey led to Mueller's appointment as special counsel. The president says Mueller's investigation is a witch hunt. Mueller would also like to ask the president about former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who is now cooperating with the special counsel's investigation.
I asked for his resignation. He respectfully gave it.
Flynn was fired just 24 days into the Trump administration for lying about his contacts with the Russian ambassador. Mueller wants to know what the president knew about those calls, why he decided to fire Flynn, and what efforts were made to reach out to Flynn about a possible pardon. Comey has said President Trump asked him to drop the Flynn investigation.
It was increasingly a concern on my part that I was interacting with him about things that touched him personally, that touched the FBI and me, our responsibilities, and that he might lie about them.
The special counsel also wants to know if the president asked Attorney General Jeff Sessions to protect him. The special counsel's office did not comment on this list of questions. The president did, tweeting that it was disgraceful that the questions were leaked. Jeff Begay, CBS News, Washington.
Cambridge Analytica says it's shutting down operations following the Facebook data scandal it was behind. Here's correspondent Bill Rakoff.
Cambridge Analytica did work for the Trump campaign in 2016, and its improper use of Facebook user data not only did self-inflicted damage to the company, but gave the social media giant a huge credibility and public relations blow. The loss of business and mounting legal fees are reported to be two of the big reasons Cambridge Analytica closed its operations.
Speaking to the NRA in Dallas, Texas Friday, President Trump pledged to defend gun rights.
You have an administration fighting to protect your Second Amendment, and we will protect your Second Amendment.
It was the first major NRA gathering since the Parkland, Florida school massacre. CBS News correspondent Stephen Portnoy traveled with the president on Air Force One to Dallas.
Since the president last spoke at an NRA convention, the debate over new gun laws has ramped up significantly. In the wake of the most recent mass killings, a handful of states have passed new gun restrictions. The NRA is suing to overturn Florida's new law, implementing a minimum age of 21 for rifle purchases.
Now something closer to home for us at CBS News. More allegations surfacing about fired CBS This Morning anchor Charlie Rose, again by the Washington Post. The allegations include groping, indecent exposure, and initiating inappropriate sexual conversations at CBS programs going back decades. Here's correspondent Bianca Golodriga.
CBS News management, the Washington Post reported, was told about Rose's behavior toward women on three different occasions, going back to 1986. In one case, the Post cited, Rose began taking a 24-year-old employee to expensive lunches and suggested other job opportunities. It was brought to the attention of the morning show's executive producer, Ryan Cadro, who said in a statement he was not told about any inappropriate behavior. A CBS News spokesperson said Cadro determined it was a job interview. In response to the Post article, CBS News said, "We cannot corroborate or confirm many of the situations described." In a separate statement, Jeff Fager, executive producer of 60 Minutes and former CBS News chairman who hired Rose two separate times, said he was one of the best interviewers in the country, period. If I knew there was this darker side, he never would have been hired. Amy Britton co-authored the Post investigation.
The women told us that they feared retaliation against their careers for speaking out against Charlie.
CBS News says there were no formal complaints filed with Human Resources against Rose before he was fired. In a statement, CBS News President David Rhodes said management has been working to create a safe environment for its staff. The journalism we do here is important, but nothing is more important than the people who do it. Rose's former co-host, Gail King, reacted to the Post report on the air.
You can't ignore what these women are saying. That's also part of my anguish here, to know that women were hurt and are saying the things that they're saying.
Charlie Rose has not responded to our request for comment, but in an email, he told the Post, "Your story is unfair and inaccurate." CBS News said that it has retained an outside law firm to help investigate sexual harassment and misconduct complaints. Bianca Golodriguez, CBS News, New York.
Still to come, a high-ranking Vatican official to go on trial.
He's the third highest-ranking member of the Catholic Church.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. New Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is leading efforts to work out an agreement with North Korea to denuclearize, as the president says his administration will soon announce when and where a summit with Kim Jong-un will be.
We're not going to take words. We're going to look for actions and deeds.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Kim Jong-un must prove he's willing to meet the administration's demands.
Does he want the pressure campaign to continue? Or is he looking for something big and bold and different?
President Trump says he won't accept less than full denuclearization. It's unclear how Kim interprets that. In exchange, Kim wants sanctions relief and a promise the U.S. won't invade North Korea.
President Trump is determined to see this opportunity through.
On Face the Nation, National Security Advisor John Bolton wouldn't say if the U.S. would make any promises.
We want to see real commitment. We don't want to see propaganda from North Korea.
You haven't seen such action so far.
We've seen words so
far. No dismantlement.
We've seen words so far.
Kim claims he will shut down the country's nuclear test site in May and open the door for the U.S. to inspect activity. But the regime has made promises before. In 2008, North Korea blew up a cooling tower at its nuclear power plant to show its commitment to stop making nuclear weapons. When diplomatic talks fell apart, the North conducted new tests.
Correspondent Weijia Jiang reporting from the White House. As President Trump weighs whether to withdraw from the Iran nuclear deal this month, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled new information he says his country's spies stole from Iran.
Incriminating blueprints.
Standing next to intelligence seized by Israeli spies from a warehouse in Tehran, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said it proved that Iran had lied about its efforts to build a nuclear weapon.
Even after the deal, Iran continued to preserve and expand its nuclear weapons know-how for future use.
Netanyahu wants the U.S. to pull out of the 2015 deal, which froze Iran's nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. Last week, the leaders of France and Germany lobbied President Trump to stick with it rather than tear up the deal as promised on the campaign trail. The president must make a decision by May 12th. The president said he may instead choose a third option, craft a new version of the agreement.
And on or before the 12th, we'll make a decision. That doesn't mean we won't negotiate a real agreement.
Most of the intelligence Netanyahu cited was from before the 2015 deal had been signed, and he did not present any evidence that Iran had violated it. Speaking to reporters on board his plane, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the new details do show that Iran has not been honest about the nature of its past nuclear research.
This will, I think, spell out the scope and scale of the program that they undertook there.
And said that so far there does not appear to be evidence to contradict his testimony last month that Iran has been faithful to the deal.
I've seen no evidence that they are not in compliance today.
But it does contradict Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif's claim on Face the Nation that Iran's past nuclear program had been for peaceful purposes.
Iran was never racing towards a bomb, and it will not be racing towards a bomb.
Correspondent Margaret Brennan reporting. Former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice talked with CBS this morning about the ramifications of pulling out of the original Iran nuclear deal.
We talk about the president and the Iran deal and the fact that he may potentially withdraw from that. How might that affect negotiations with North Korea?
Well, some have said the North Koreans will then think that America's not trustworthy, right? But this would be a little bit the pot calling the kettle black, right? I mean, the North Koreans saying Americans aren't trustworthy, I'm not too worried about that.
So you don't think that?
I don't really think that this would be an issue. The North Koreans are going to negotiate, if they negotiate, because it's in their interest to do so, because they're under pressure. What has happened with Iran, I think, isn't the issue.
Condoleezza Rice with CBS This Morning. A double suicide bombing in Kabul, Afghanistan, killed nearly a dozen journalists as they, too, become targets of militants. More from CBS News correspondent Charlie Daggett.
Reporters rushed to the scene of yet another bomb blast, not knowing they were about to become the next victims. A second suicide bomber flashed police a fake press card before joining the crowd of journalists and blowing himself up. Among the dead, AFP Shah Marai, whose poignant images chronicled life and death in his war-ravaged homeland for 20 years. He started as a driver, but his keen eye and courage saw him rise to the role of chief photographer. ISIS claimed responsibility for the attack and has targeted journalists in the past. While the terrorist group's foothold is just a tiny fraction compared to the Taliban, both are responsible for a surge in violence that's left hundreds dead in the past year alone. Adding to the day's violence, an attack on a NATO convoy in Kandahar, southern Afghanistan, killed 11 school children. The school was just on the roadside where the explosion took place. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, London.
More violent clashes broke out Friday in the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip. Here's CBS News correspondent Robert Berger in Jerusalem.
Thousands of Palestinians held protests on the Gaza border for the sixth Friday in a row. Israeli troops fired tear gas, rubber bullets, and live ammunition to keep them away from the security fence. The Palestinians have a new weapon. They are flying kites with burning rags across the border to burn Israeli crops. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
The highest-ranking Vatican official to be charged with sexual abuse learned he'll face a criminal trial on Tuesday during a hearing in a Melbourne, Australia courtroom. Correspondent Seth Doan has more from Rome.
Cardinal George Pell is a top advisor to Pope Francis, and he's the third highest-ranking member of the Catholic Church. He's accused by multiple people of sex abuse charges that date back decades to when he was a priest in Australia. The specifics are not public, and while about half of the charges were dismissed, the judge still found there's enough evidence to bring the case to trial. Pell has been accused of sexually offending two choir members at a cathedral in Melbourne and of other sexual abuses at locations including a pool. We heard Pell emphatically declare his innocence at a Vatican press conference last June.
The whole idea of sexual abuse is abhorrent to me.
Pope Francis. Monsignor Anthony Figueiredo, who has spoken with Pope Francis about the Pell case, told us having such a key figure on trial puts the whole church in the spotlight.
Below the Pope, the cardinals are next in rank. And certainly Cardinal Pell, being such a senior figure, is extremely serious in terms of the credibility of the Roman Catholic Church.
Fighting sex abuse in the church is one of Pope Francis's top priorities. He says he has a zero-tolerance policy for it. The pontiff granted Cardinal Pell a leave of absence from heading one of his other priorities, reforming church finances. That top spot is still open. Seth Doan, CBS News, Rome.
Up next, CBS's Jeff Bloor investigates the U.S. flood insurance program on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A group of migrants in a so-called caravan has reached the U.S.-Mexico border requesting asylum, but their arrival came with this message from Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
We are not going to let this country be overwhelmed. People are not going to caravan or otherwise stampede our border.
Sessions is beefing up the number of U.S. attorneys and judges to process migrants. More from correspondent Maria Villarreal.
So far, more than two dozen members of this group have trickled into U.S. Customs for processing, including the first, Gabriela Hernandez from Honduras, mother of two with another on the way. She said she had no choice but to leave to protect her family from gang violence and wants a better life in the U.S. The process could take months, and an immigration judge will have the final say. In the first year of the Trump administration, more than 26,000 people were granted asylum, which includes 1,300 from China and 841 from Egypt, an increase of 27% from 2016, the last year under the Obama administration. Some 31,000 from Central American countries sought asylum in 2017, but about 70% were denied. The caravan hasn't been without controversy. The Justice Department charged 11 people with crossing the border illegally. Officials say 10 of them come from countries associated with the caravan. Group organizers say the Justice Department is trying to criminalize their efforts.
Nobody on either the organizing team or the legal team of this caravan has ever encouraged anyone to cross illegally.
Video Villarreal, CBS News, Tijuana, Mexico.
A CBS News investigation by Jeff Glor shows shortcomings in FEMA's flood insurance program.
You can still see some of the mud.
Ricky Wall and Melissa Miles were trapped in their home for 3 days when flooding hit Louisiana in 2016.
My beautiful home's gone.
It was coming so fast. Yeah. It was white capping over the road.
Over the roads.
Covered in sewer water, they thought things couldn't get worse.
It was pretty tough. Heartbreaking.
Their home was ruined, but they had a flood insurance policy that they were required to buy, worth $176,000.
The insurance company was a nightmare.
When insurance didn't pay enough to fix their home, they had to come up with the cash themselves to do it. And so they decided to fight the National Flood Insurance Program for lowballing them. They are still fighting for $40,000.
This is ridiculous that I'm paying for something that I have to fight for.
Run by FEMA, the National Flood Insurance Program is responsible for all flood policies in the U.S. Insurance premiums and taxpayer dollars fund the program, about $3 billion a year. But FEMA doesn't administer all the policies. It outsources to private insurance companies called Write Your Owns, or WYOs. They and all of their agents get paid out of the same pot of money as flood victims. Some years, up to two-thirds of that pot goes to WYOs and the attorneys they hire to fight against flood victims.
Come on, buddy.
In effect, by paying their premiums on time every year, homeowners like Ricky and Melissa help fund the very lawyers fighting them in court.
How can they sleep at night?
Wall's insurance company hired the Louisiana law firm of Gerald Nielsen to fight Ricky and Melissa's claim. Nielsen's firm has been fighting flood claims on behalf of insurance companies for over 30 years, not without controversy. After Superstorm Sandy, Congress criticized Nielsen's firm for how it defended WIOs, whose engineers allegedly altered reports to avoid paying claims.
He dealt with Sandy victims like they were the perpetrators, enriching himself at their expense.
A New York judge called Nielsen's misconduct in one Sandy case remorseless for delaying cases at taxpayer expense. CBS News obtained a budget drafted in 2014 for a Sandy case showing Nielsen's firm estimated that a single case would cost $188,000 taxpayer dollars if it went to trial. The cap on any home flood policy is $250,000.
Mr. Nielsen, we're with CBS News.
Nielsen didn't want to talk to us about his fees and expenses.
But I've got to go through ethics counsel, because some of what you've asked clearly is privileged.
A public information request revealed FEMA paid Nielsen's firm at least $29 million for Sandy cases alone.
Things need to change.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to do something about it.
How are you?
Wall hired attorney John Hotaling. Hotaling's firm represents flood victims and fought in court against Nielsen's firm during Sandy.
There was no effort to mitigate the cost.
FEMA says it has no authority to fire lawyers hired by private insurance companies.
They're jacking around policyholders. That's unacceptable. And somebody's got to do something about it. And by God, it's supposed to be FEMA.
Senator John Kennedy has a bill to change that.
Once they get that authority, I will chase them like a hound from hell until I find out that they fix this problem.
Come on. Homeowners like Wall wish FEMA had tightened its belt before making him pay out of his own pocket.
That's not fair.
FEMA is now creating an oversight team to address billing and litigation matters. Defense officials are investigating a Puerto Rico National Guard C-130 military cargo plane that crashed Wednesday in Savannah, killing all 9 people on board.
Witnesses heard 2 booms. First the crash, then even louder, an explosion. They said the earth shook.
Holy sh**.
Roger Best got to the wreckage ahead of first responders.
It looked like a war zone, to be honest, which is just scattered debris everywhere. And trees were on fire, and the wreckage was still burning and smoldering. I've never smelled or seen anything like that. It just was horrible. The way that plane was smashed onto the ground, it's going to be kind of hard for them to recover anything.
The crash, its cause unknown, happened at 11:30 in the morning, about a quarter mile away from a busy intersection. Gene Bilbo is with the Effingham County Sheriff's Department.
As far as we know, there were no cars hit in this crash. It is an absolute miracle at that time of day and that intersection.
Best believes the pilot saved lives on the ground.
First of all, that guy should really be recognized as a hero, because I think he knew that plane was in trouble, and he guided it out of the way the best he could.
But all the crew, members of the Puerto Rico Air National Guard, are believed dead. They were en route to Arizona on a training mission. The plane had just finished routine maintenance in Savannah.
CBS News has learned this cargo plane was one of the oldest C-130s still flying and was on its way to Tucson to be retired. After takeoff, it was in the air for about 2 miles when it suddenly dropped from the sky. Mark Strassman, CBS News, Savannah, Georgia.
Back in Washington, there's been an abrupt about-face in the forced resignation of the chaplain of the House of Representatives, the Reverend Patrick Conroy.
I'm not commenting.
That's Conroy, a Catholic priest, telling reporters he's not commenting and the story's not over. After sending House Speaker Paul Ryan a letter withdrawing his resignation, Ryan came under fire for requesting his resignation after saying he got complaints from members about Conroy's pastoral services. Conroy will remain on the job. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, a new warning about diseases spread by bugs. Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A new book tells the story of the mission to fly a spacecraft to Pluto. New Horizons almost didn't get off the ground. CBS News correspondent Peter King spoke with Dr. Alan Stern, the co-author of Chasing New Horizons. And for starters, he asked what scientists found so interesting about Pluto downgraded to a dwarf planet.
You know, Pluto's so far away, it was only a dot in the distance, even to the Hubble Space Telescope. So for us as scientists to try to understand this new type of world, this small planet that has so many brethren on the edge of our solar system, we knew we needed a mission. And that was most of the attraction.
It was a really, really tough sell. Why?
In our case, we had some bad luck. We had a couple of study projects that were not very well managed. We had a couple that went, haywire in terms of being over budget. There was a Mars mission that exploded just as we were about to get a start on Pluto, and the money went to replace that spacecraft instead of start a Pluto mission. It just took a lot of stick to it. Together, it took over 12 years from the time that we had the idea until we really had a project to go out and build and launch.
Well, but there was also a lot of competition between different entities who all wanted to go to Pluto, too.
All the other planets from Mercury out to Neptune have been explored by the time that we got this underway. This was kind of the last train to Clarksville, the last big first mission of exploration in our solar system. And so there was a lot of competition.
At one point, a NASA guy named Todd May told you, you're not going to make it.
There were so many alligators in the water. First, we were challenged by the fact that though NASA approved us to do the project, they only had about 20% of the money that they had spent on previous projects like this, like Voyager. So we had to fit it into a very tight cost box, really required some breakthroughs. And that four-year schedule was tough too. Most of the previous missions to the outer planets had taken 8 or more years to develop. A lot of software challenges. We had some challenges with our nuclear power supply in the Department of Energy. We had some political challenges. It was a rough and tumble 4 years.
Did you anticipate all the things that could possibly happen along the way, whether it was, you know, debris out there, whether it was all the moons around Pluto or other things that could get in the way?
You know, New Horizons was a one-shot exploration. We didn't have a backup spacecraft. There was no redo if it didn't work at Pluto. We had to hit our target, and all that software to point the spacecraft at the planet and all of its moons, all the navigation, all that required just an enormous amount of attention to detail to get right. Let me give you just one spec. Had we been more than 9 minutes off the arrival time after that 9.5 years, the flyby wouldn't have worked. But in fact, our navigators actually got us all the way across the solar system, 3+ billion miles, and arrived only 86 seconds off target. And I'm proud to say they were 86 seconds early.
Months of boredom punctuated by moments of terror. You had one of those big moments that happened July 4th weekend of 2015, just before the flyby.
The spacecraft quit communicating with the Earth, and that's never, ever supposed to happen. As it turned out, a software bug had caused a computer reset, and that spacecraft problem erased all the flyby plans, all the software, navigation files, everything that was on the spacecraft. And with no warning, And just literally 3 days from the beginning of the close approach sequence, we had to swing into action to recover the spacecraft, get communications back, reprogram it with all the files and plans that had been put up by radio command over a period of several months, and do that in only 3 days. And if they hadn't been able to get it back on track and reprogrammed, we would have had an embarrassment on our hands. There would have been no exploration of Pluto after a 26-year quest, but they saved the day.
Peter King with Dr. Alan Stern. The Centers for Disease Control is warning the number of people getting sick from bug bites is spreading rapidly. Infections from mosquitoes, ticks, and fleas have more than tripled since 2004, and at least 9 new diseases have been reported for the first time in the U.S. More from CBS News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John Lapook.
The 16 diseases tracked by the CDC include well-known illnesses like Lyme and Zika, which have seen a dramatic rise since 2004. Lyme disease cases have doubled to about 36,000 a year. And the CDC says because of underreporting, the real number is closer to 300,000. Diseases carried by mosquitoes like dengue, chikungunya, and Zika were seen in sharp spikes. In 2016, there were more than 40,000 cases of Zika, mostly in U.S. territories, especially Puerto Rico.
A growing E. coli outbreak in the U.S. is raising new concerns.
The CDC here in Atlanta is reporting the first death linked to the multi-state E. coli outbreak. A person in California has now died after eating romaine lettuce. The CDC's Matthew Wise says this strain of E. coli is especially nasty.
It's one that tends to cause more severe illness based on the toxin profile that it produces.
The number of people sickened has now grown to 121 in 25 states. More than half ended up in the hospital. The CDC says don't eat any romaine lettuce from the Yuma, Arizona region, and if there's any question, don't eat it. Sabrina Cupid for CBS News, Atlanta.
Hundreds of people are responding to a story CBS News first reported about a cluster of ocular melanoma, a rare eye cancer. Correspondent Anna Werner talked with 4 friends who went to Auburn University and all were diagnosed with the disease, as more people are coming forward with similar health issues.
I don't know if you've ever been through something by yourself, but the worst place to be is alone. And so this has been able to provide people just a family.
One of those people is Kayla Allman from Tennessee.
Well, it all began as a shock because I've always had perfect vision.
The 30-year-old was diagnosed with ocular melanoma this past September. She underwent radiation treatment and lost nearly all the vision in her right eye. She saw our story about Ashley and 3 other women who attended Auburn University who are battling the same rare eye cancer.
Do you feel like you have a community now?
Just to get support, peace of mind, and just to feel like you're not alone, I think is a huge, huge benefit of that group.
Part of that group, Allison Allred, our affiliate WIAT in Birmingham, which has been following the story since last year, spoke with Dr. John Mason, who is treating Allred.
Most recently, in the last year or two, I've seen more cases of melanoma than I've seen in the previous 21 years. We don't know why.
Funding for new studies in Alabama has been hard to come by. Both the state of Alabama and Auburn University declined to offer funding. The university has set up a task force, but Allred says more needs to be done.
Without the research, there's not a chance of us finding the cause or the possible link.
McCrary and Allred hope more attention will generate more funding and ultimately save lives.
McCrary's doctors in Philadelphia say they've received so many calls since our first story aired related to ocular melanoma, they've had to create a dedicated phone line to handle them all. Anna Werner, CBS News, New York.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, people flee an erupting volcano in Hawaii.
The eruption followed a series of earthquakes on the island over the last couple of days.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
If you like this podcast, check out what other podcasts are available from CBS News Radio.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Scott Pruitt.
Climate's changing. We contribute to it. I've said that 1,000 times, okay?
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez.
That's what this president has always been about. He divides people.
Samantha Bee, our very special guest.
I think I just realized my voice is really boring on podcasts. I'm sorry, everyone.
Not at all. True. Subscribe now for a new podcast every Friday morning. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Hawaii's Kilauea volcano was prompting evacuations as it began to erupt on the Big Island Thursday.
The lava, along with smoke and ash, spread into the Puna residential community of Leilani Estate, home to about 1,700 people. They were all ordered to evacuate.
It literally broke out right down the hill from our house. I smelt it and I ran to the corner, and that's when I ran into a military officer that told me that it's smoking. And I sure as heck enough, you know, take the turn, and my entire, one of my favorite streets at least, was on fire.
The eruption followed a series of earthquakes on the island over the last couple of days, including a 5.0 tremor earlier in the morning. Hawaii County declared an emergency, allowing officials to close roads and free up money for relief efforts.
We have employees, National Guard persons en route and already on site at the Hawaii Emergency Management Center.
The Kilauea volcano is one of five on the island. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, lava has been flowing from the volcano for more than three decades, covering over 48 square miles. Hanadoba, CBS News.
Meanwhile, Hawaii may become the first state to ban sunscreen that hurts ocean life. CBS's Jim Shenevy has more.
Hawaii state lawmakers have passed a measure that would ban the sale of some popular sunscreens that contain chemicals that can be toxic to coral. If signed by the governor, the ban would go into effect in 2021 and would include Hawaiian Tropic, Copper Tone, and Banana Boat, among other sunscreens. Prescription sunscreens containing the same ingredients would still be permitted.
The U.S. has turned over thousands of ancient artifacts to Iraq.
Thousands of Iraqi archaeological artifacts that were smuggled into the U.S. were turned over to the Iraqi ambassador Fareed Yassin. The items, including ancient clay tablets and seals, had been shipped to the head of arts and crafts chain Hobby Lobby. The Oklahoma-based company agreed to pay a $3 million fine to settle a lawsuit over its role in the smuggling of the artifacts, which officials say were looted from war-torn Iraq. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Erin Moriarty is back on 48 Hours this weekend. This time, she's investigating the case of a young wife who nearly died. At first, saying she tried to kill herself, then changing her story. Erin, what happened?
Well, I mean, of course, that's the reason why you'll be watching. But why we picked this case is it really illustrates one of the major difficulties in trying to solve domestic violence. This case, like most of these cases, start off as a he said, she said. She said, I tried to kill myself. He said she did. And then she changed her story, saying, no, actually, my husband. Once then they get down to what really happened, the hardest part for these investigators and what you'll see in our hour is trying to prevent the case from getting worse. This was, to all appearances, an attempted murder. So trying to prove that is difficult, and then trying to keep it from becoming a murder, because in many of these domestic violence cases, that's how they escalate.
How badly injured was she?
I think that viewers will be shocked to really see what happened to her. And in fact, when she later told us what happened to her, it was chilling. One of the first responders said that it was three fingers deep, her cut in her neck. She was cut really almost from ear to ear, and he just missed the jugular vein.
Wow. How's she doing now?
Actually, astonishingly well, although, and we talked to her about it, she's left with a lot of scars, both literally on her neck and psychologically. And how she's scarred actually surprised me. Some of the things that remind her of what happened to her took me aback. Unless you've been in her shoes, you really don't understand until she tells you about it. In the interview, when she described what happened to her, everyone in the room, and I'm talking about cameramen who have covered these cases for years, my producer, everyone in the room were in tears.
Does this have any similarities with other cases of perhaps domestic abuse and domestic violence you've covered in the past?
I think it really is an example of almost every single kind of domestic violence case. It illustrates the problems that you have in trying to determine what really happened between a couple, the he said, she said part. But it also illustrates how difficult it is for investigators to prevent the a murder. In this case, you have a husband and wife. You can't really keep them apart. There are two kids. They're going to see each other. They have a history. And so how do you prevent a murder from occurring? And one of the reasons why we picked this case is that the deputy sheriffs involved and the prosecutors went above and beyond to try to save this woman's life. I think it is an example for law enforcement throughout the country to see what they did. It involved hours of listening to jailhouse phone calls, looking at videos of jailhouse interviews, of tracking down informants. And they did it all to save one woman's life.
Amazing. 48 Hours correspondent Aaron Moriarty investigates Don't Scream. You can catch 48 Hours on Saturday nights on CBS TV or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks again, Aaron.
Thank you.
Hobby Lobby's president and founder of Washington's new Bible Museum says the items weren't intended for the museum. A settlement has been reached in the Philadelphia Starbucks case. The April 12th arrests of two black men at a Starbucks store there sparked widespread protests and calls for boycotts of the coffee chain. KYW reporter Sherry Gregg has the story.
The city has confirmed that Dante Robinson and Rashawn Nelson have settled all claims stemming from their April 12th arrest for a total of $1 each. Their attorney, Stuart Cohen, has waived all attorney's fees as well. Instead, the city and the two young men will work with a nonprofit to develop and fund a $200,000 grant for a program for public high school kids who wish to become entrepreneurs.
It's fair. I think that it is productive. It's positive in nature as far as all the ultimate use of the money.
Mayor Jim Kenney says the settlement allows the city to move forward and heal. The next step is to complete the internal affairs investigation and audit police procedures.
In effort to fight food waste?
Taking your leftovers home is commonplace in the U.S., but in France, foodies turn their noses up at the thought. They may have to get used to it. A proposed law would require bistros and cafes there to provide doggy bags to any customer who asks. The practice is so rare, the French actually call them le doggy bag. Despite an effort by the restaurant industry to promote the practice with the more chic term le gourmet bag, a government study shows 70% of French people have never taken home leftovers. 75% say they are open to the idea. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.